Good afternoon. I'm Andrew Shantz, one of the managing partners of the Shantz Mantione Group at UBS Private Wealth Management. And I'm excited for today's interview as we have three really stellar people who've come together during the COVID-19 crisis and use their skills and the organizations they lead to really affect change. Joining me today, first, are my partner, Tom Mantione. Tom's a managing director at UBS Private Wealth Management, normally in Stamford, Connecticut. Thank you for joining us today, Tom.
Thank you, Andrew. It's a pleasure to be here.
We're also joined by Phyllis Costanza, head UBS in Society and CEO UBS Optimist Foundation. Phyllis is committed to making UBS a force for driving positive change in society. In her role as CEO of the Optimist Foundation, she applies an investment-based approach, making it simpler for clients and their families to manage their philanthropy and to maximize their impact. Prior to UBS, Phyllis was with the Children's Investment Fund Foundation in the UK. She has more than a decade of experience as a consultant and worked in the public sector as the New York City representative for New York Governor Mario Cuomo, advising on policy and politics in Manhattan. She holds a Master of Public Policy from Harvard University's John F. Kennedy School of Government. Thank you for joining us, Phyllis.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're very welcome. Our third guest is Christine Squires, President and CEO of AmeriCares. Based in Stamford, Connecticut, AmeriCares helps communities prepare for, respond to, and recover from natural disasters, increase access to medicine and medical supplies, improve and expand clinical services, and prevent disease and promote good health, all things that are critical right now. Prior to joining AmeriCares in 2016, she served as Chief Operating Officer for Physicians for Human Rights, served as a Managing Director for Human Rights Watch, and spent 10 years at UNICEF USA. And I believe you officially assumed the role of CEO right as we were all going into lockdown, which is pretty amazing. Christine, thank you for spending some time with us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here, and thank you for your support.
You're very welcome. Phyllis, I'd like to start with you. How would you describe Optimist? Give us a sense of its background and purpose.
Gladly. Optimist Foundation was founded 20 years ago by UBS in Switzerland, and it started out as a service to help our clients with their philanthropy. They were coming to us saying, you're helping us manage our wealth, and as part of that, we also are trying to give our money away, and we need help, and we'd love your advice on how to do it. And since then, we've expanded now to a number of countries around the world. We've got 7 offices for our clients. And UBS covers 100% of the overhead costs. So when clients make donations through the foundation, 100% of their money goes out to the programs that are having some of the greatest impact on children's lives. And we're focusing on children's health, education, and child protection. And we've recently added the environment as well. And this is particularly important right now as we're looking at this pandemic and the crisis. And clients are donating through the foundation where we're partnering with AmeriCares. And not only is their donation going directly to AmeriCares, but UBS has also contributed 100% match of all donations that have gone in from our clients and our employees.
That's fantastic. I know we had several of our team members contribute and wanting to be involved. Christine, in a similar vein, how would you describe AmeriCares and your purpose?
Our mission is to save lives and improve health of people affected by poverty or disaster. But often, and especially now, poverty and disaster intersect because those in poverty are most affected. We do this so people have the opportunity to reach their full potential. We believe that everyone deserves the chance to be healthy and to have quality health care. We were founded, AmeriCares, 40 years ago by a Connecticut philanthropist and businessman. His name is Bob McCauley. And we've grown in 40 years into a global organization that supports over 4,000 health centers and hospitals in 90 countries, including the United States. And what we do is we invest in the local health center and clinic. So families, people in their communities have that opportunity for better health. And we are really fortunate to have a broad base of support from individuals and corporations and foundations, including Optimist. And I want to thank you so much for your support. We're going to talk more about that. But really, you've been critical in helping us with the COVID-19 response.
That's fantastic. I imagine, given your mission, you are really in the thick of it right now. Tom, you had an interesting role here, and you were involved in bringing these two organizations. Can you describe how this partnership started?
It's always a funny story. So my wife and I had the opportunity 2 years ago in October to join some friends at a table at the airlift benefit in the Westchester County Airport for AmeriCares. At that point, I can be honest, I did not know the organization well. I had heard the name. But that evening, my wife and I kind of fell in love with what the organization was doing around the globe and felt like it was a great opportunity for us to give back. As you well know, Andrew, my wife and I are pretty philanthropic in nature, and I've been blessed in my life. So I feel like it's an obligation of mine to give back to the people that need it the most. The following year, we brought some friends ourselves, and my wife had the opportunity to go on an airlift with AmeriCares to the Dominican Republic and see a handful of sites where they were operating and meet the people that they were helping and the people that they've trained to help those people. And it was an out-of-body experience for her. And upon her return, she said, we need to get more involved. And I had always been a fan of Optimus's work, being a UBS employee and having clients that have used their services in the past. It dawned on me, wait, these two great organizations are doing the same thing in similar places. And what we've learned at UBS over the years when we talk about philanthropy is that when you bring people trying to do things, the same things together, the leverage of that dollar, the leverage of that knowledge and wisdom, the leverage of that partnership can really create even more change than any one person can do on their own. So much prior to the COVID issues that we face today, it was just an idea that I had to put these two organizations together and see where it went. And then lo and behold, we had a crisis that both of these organizations decided to respond to and respond together and make a proof that, you know, leverage can actually work substantially well.
That's interesting. Christine, what does the overall partnership with Optimus mean to AmeriCares right now? What's happening?
So the support from Optimus is critical, and it's critical for our COVID-19 response here in the U.S. and in vulnerable communities around the world. I want to say that Optimus was one of the first donors to make a significant commitment to our COVID response. Y'all remember back in the time in February, we all didn't know where this was going. So donors were slow to respond and commit. So that was really helpful in launching an immediate response, but also helping us plan for a longer term response. So unfortunately, we expect our COVID-19 response to go on for a very long time. It's part of our programming, it's part of what we do. And by ramping up donations of personal protective equipment, infection control supplies, and then training for health workers and health centers, we're helping partner clinics respond to COVID-19, but also provide essential primary care services that are needed right now. So again, I'd have to say that this partnership is incredibly important and really is a launching pad for us to get going, and we'll be there in the long term.
You said something that piqued my curiosity there when you said you were planning for this for a long time. And obviously, the logistics of what you do probably requires some careful thought. How long are you planning your efforts specifically related to COVID?
So we are, as an organization, sort of in the immediate response phase. We've built our plan to go 18 months, 2 years. But actually, what AmeriCares does, every way that we are responding to COVID-19 is how we operate. So by providing essential medicines and medical supplies, by ensuring that health centers have the capacity to operate in their communities and provide quality health care, this is all part of what we're doing. And one of the things that we're concerned with is that the pandemic continues and the virus has its peaks and valleys. Ongoing healthcare is really important, and we're worried about folks being able to get the care that they need for other health issues so they don't die needlessly of preventable causes.
Thank you for that. Phyllis, from your side, how does Optimus view the partnership?
First of all, Tom, thank you for making the connection. And you should know that we usually get over 1,000 requests for funding, and they often come from our own employees or from outside organizations. This year, we will be getting thousands of requests. And we accept about 3% of all of the proposals that we get in. And so the fact that you made a recommendation that was then ultimately approved, reviewed, and approved just speaks volumes about the types of organizations that have excited you. And also, it speaks volumes about AmeriCare. So for us, this is a really critical partnership. We're really proud to be partnering with AmeriCares. And the reason we chose them is because all organizations we choose only when we're really confident that they're going to be putting our money and our clients' money to good use. And AmeriCares has a very strong track record, and they've got experience in response to Ebola and to Zika. And they don't only intervene in emergencies, but because we also want to respond to the short-term emergency needs, like Christine just mentioned, we also have to think about this in the long term. And AmeriCares provides the long-term capacity that will strengthen health systems around the world to make them better able to respond to issues like this and crises like this in the future. So in essence, making them more resilient against disease outbreaks like COVID. And then finally, they've got a really strong network on the ground with partners globally, and which really enables them to keep their finger on the pulse of what's happening in each community, because as we can see here in the United States, the situation in New York City is dramatically different than the situation in Wichita, Kansas. And so we have to design local responses for these very different needs that each community is going to be having. So we're really proud. And for us, this is one of our partnerships in this whole crisis.
This is Tom, but one of the beauties that I see in Optimus is your accountability of the organizations that you're dealing with. The reports that I can share with clients of what you're actually accomplishing in so many philanthropic ways, it's hard to point to any concrete outcomes. And I think, Phyllis, you and your team do a phenomenal job of showing that accountability. And I would echo your comments about AmeriCares. I've always, since I was a child, heard if you give a person a fish, you feed them for a day, but if you teach them how to fish, you feed them for life. And I think both of your organizations do an excellent job of not just handling the crisis response, but really expanding that to having the community then be the crisis response once you have to go, right? And I know, Christine, you have people in places still all around the world in response to crisis that have happened years and years ago, and also have created community health facilities around the globe where the community themselves can do the ongoing care. And I think that's the beauty of both of your organizations, is the commitment, yes, to the short term and yes, to the accountability, but the long term creation of the foundation for success at what you're trying to accomplish.
Christine, that was an interesting thought there as well, as Phyllis was talking about your global efforts. Can you give us a sense of that? Or is it evenly spread, or are you more focused in one continent or one country more than another?
So we reach a total of 90 countries, as I mentioned, with medicines and medical supplies. Some of the more of our deeper programmatic work, we are spread out a bit. I can give some examples. For example, we actually own and operate 10 clinics in Colombia that are helping with the Venezuelan migration crisis. We also, I think as Tom mentioned, have examples of where something may have started out as an emergency response, but we're there for the longer term, really helping the local health centers continue to thrive and stand on their own 2 feet. So that's for Puerto Rico. We started responding in 2017 with Hurricane Maria. We are there. We're going to be there for the long term. Luckily, we've been doing some training with health workers and mental health and psychosocial support following Hurricane Maria. And that's continued through the earthquakes in Puerto Rico and now during this COVID-19 pandemic. We're also in India, where we have mobile health centers. working in the slums of Mumbai. We're in the Philippines, which is very disaster prone. So we're right there, ready to respond. Many places around the world, some have started as disaster response, and we found a need, a gap, and have stayed there for the long term.
How much of your activity has shifted to COVID-19 response versus these other longer term projects?
So I'd say most, though I think how we're looking towards the future is supporting clinics and making sure that they can do their best to provide ongoing health services as part of our COVID-19 response. I can give an example. So in the U.S., we actually have 4 clinics in Connecticut. We quickly had to move to mostly of a telehealth for the safety of the patients and for the safety of our clinical staff. Those clinics are continuing to provide ongoing coaching, counseling, and medicines that those patients need, also helping with referral for testing for COVID-19. That work is really critical to continue. It's interesting where the hotspot is now and has been in the U.S. So as far as personal protective equipment and masks and other supplies, we really have been focusing on the hotspots in New York and Tri-State area and Washington and others. And then in addition, globally to staff where we have clinical operations. So it's been interesting from someone who's been in this work for a while to see that the U.S. is the real hot spot. That's a unique position to be in.
Phyllis, in terms of Optimus, obviously we're talking about the AmeriCares partnership. Is there a broader mission for Optimus in COVID response as well?
Well, yes, we have been focusing primarily around 3 main pillars for our COVID response. Number 1 is we're providing acute emergency relief for the most vulnerable through core partners like AmeriCares and Doctors Without Borders, who have emergency response capacity and strong experience to enable them to intervene based on identified on-the-ground needs. And secondly, we're supporting our existing grantees in the areas of health, education, and child protection to engage in COVID-19 preparedness, response, and recovery efforts, and maintain organizational viability. Because as we know, funds are not flowing right now to organizations who desperately need to maintain their work. Also, filling gaps for low-cost prevention and treatment solutions. And for the most part, our work has been in developing countries, although we're increasing our footprint in the U.S. But in developing countries, these are countries with already very weak healthcare systems. According to some estimates, we could see millions of deaths from COVID if it hits there as hard as it's hit China, Europe, and the U.S. So what is this look like for us? It means that in the areas of healthcare, we're really focusing our funding to support frontline healthcare workers. These are organizations that are deeply embedded in the communities in which they work in Africa primarily, and working to strengthen healthcare systems. So they're deploying community healthcare workers who are providing critical care, because the challenge is, as we saw during the Ebola outbreak in West Africa in 2014-15, that more people died from preventable causes like malaria and maternal mortality due to closures of healthcare clinics and centers and decline in use of health services because of Ebola. So we can't lose focus on those leading killers, primarily of children and pregnant women is one, as we're struggling to address COVID. And then also in education, we're supporting continuity of education in places where schools are closed, which is pretty much around the globe right now. And then in child protection, we're also addressing the needs of vulnerable families with food and financial assistance, and also supporting case management so that we can address issues around family separation, but child exploitation or abuse, which also we've seen violence against women and children has gone up substantially right now. So those are some of the key areas that we're focusing on.
That's a very comprehensive program. It's interesting, some of the things that you said there about these ongoing healthcare systems and preventable death issues. My wife, Andrea, and I have some friends that are doctors and have some clinics in the area, and they've seen tremendous declines in the number of people coming in for routine medical issues. So I'm assuming those things didn't stop happening, but they're just, I guess, through fear or closures, people don't want to go out.
Absolutely. You know, you hear emergency room doctors saying, where are the patients? they're not coming in. We can all understand that.
As a chime in, you know, Phyllis mentioned healthcare systems and you're working in Africa. AmeriCares actually responded to the Ebola crisis in Liberia in 2014. We're still there for the long term and we're doing work and training and ongoing maternal and child health. But there's certainly some lessons learned that we saw there from the Ebola crisis about fear of going into seek care. And we did see that there was a story of a father who was suffering a hypertensive issue and his daughter was actually in an Ebola treatment unit. She survived and he did not. So I just want to underscore what you said about making sure that we're able to care for the communities and these ongoing health issues.
It's interesting you both brought up the Ebola crisis and seems like you were both involved in it. How do you take the lessons that you learned from something like that and move them forward? How do you improve your process?
You know, it's interesting because I was talking to Pierno, who is a country director in Liberia, you know, asking him that same question and with COVID-19 compared to Ebola. And I think there are in the community some lessons learned about good, healthy practices in infection prevention, control, hand washing, but also making sure that they have the means and facilities to do so. I think working on the fear factor, perhaps, again, the fear of health workers that was so prominent during the Ebola crisis. Again, Liberia, they did lock down pretty early on. So I think they did learn some lessons from the Ebola crisis. And I think the concern is the information we see coming out of the countries we work in Africa is very underreported. There's not a lot of testing. And as this thing gets worse, the weakened healthcare system is going to be even more challenged to deal with it.
Some of the lessons that we learned from Ebola was the critical need to respond early. And we're really proud we were one of the first responders in the Ebola crisis. And it made a big difference in how the virus was spread, in particular in Liberia, which you also referenced. That's one lesson. The second key lesson we learned is work with organizations that have on-the-ground presence and that are willing and able to stay there for the long term. Now, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't also support organizations like Doctors Without Borders who are there for emergency relief and not long-term development assistance. But you respond to them, there's a time and a place for that. But also do not forget to think about this as a long-term health crisis because did we not fund some of these community healthcare programs in Liberia, they wouldn't be as well prepared now to address this. So we're really looking for organizations that have a presence in the countries that have some of the weakest healthcare systems and that are there for the long term.
Another reason why this is a fantastic partnership.
Excellent. Indeed.
I haven't been picking on Tom too much, so I do have a question for you, Tom, and maybe we can go to Phyllis and Christine. In terms of your clients, Tom, have you seen a diversion of current philanthropic efforts or are clients increasing what they're doing, rebranding what they're doing? Give us a sense of what you're seeing.
It's a great question. I think I can answer that in two ways. One, what my wife and I have done personally, and then kind of what we've seen, Andrew, our clients do, and what we're really encouraging people to do. We also were early supporters of COVID efforts, both at Optimus and at AmeriCares, which are national and global in nature. I sit in Ridgefield, Connecticut, and we have our own issues here in Fairfield County, where both from a COVID perspective and from the organizations that we typically support annually, many in this environment, many charities have had their fundraising impeded because most of them are event-driven, whether it's a gala being canceled or something having to be rescheduled. Fiscal years are typically in June. This has become a real challenge for a lot of organizations that do wonderful work. My wife and I accelerated our typical contributions to those organizations that aren't necessarily involved in any way in a COVID response, just to make sure that those places didn't fall apart given the lack of funding. I don't know what the number will be at the end of the year, but personally, we've certainly increased our philanthropic efforts this year as we've supported all of the charities we would typically support and then added a response, both very local response in Ridgefield and the surrounding Fairfield County, Connecticut community, but also at the national and global level. And I think, Andrew, we did a call on the philanthropic impacts of the CARES Act that was the last piece of legislation provided. And there's some advantage and encouragement by that legislation to allow individuals, both small and large, to provide a response now to charities in two ways. So if you're not an itemizer of your income tax deductions, like my mom, you're still going to get a $300 deduction above the line, encouraging smaller donations to organizations. And then completely on the other end of the spectrum, the 50% limitation against adjusted gross income has been waived this year. So if you're inclined, you could, if you're giving direct to charities, eliminate 100% of your adjusted gross income this year. And that's done, I think, in a very thoughtful way, which is not something a lot of people say about our government these days, but in a very thoughtful way, encouraging both small and large capital, understanding that we as the United States have been a philanthropic juggernaut around the world, and we need to step up in a moment like this to support not only our local communities, the people on the front lines, but globally the effort to help the people that this is going to affect even more than it does here, as both Phyllis and Christine understand. Thank you for that question.
You're welcome. Phyllis, what would you think about that? What is optimist seeing? Are people diverting to respond to this, or the is this in addition to kind of the normal philanthropic efforts?
This year, what we're seeing is that for the most part, people are giving more, at least through us. So we've raised more funds this year at this time than we have in any other year. And our pipeline for donations is substantially above where we ended the year last year. So that is in large part driven by COVID, but this has also underscored the inequalities that we're living in, and also has raised the attention of some real issues that we need to address. And that inequality is manifesting itself in a lot of ways. We see it in unemployment rates, but we also see it in issues like violence against women and children. So we're also seeing more funding going to those indirect causes of COVID. Even from our employees, I've just been amazed at the incredible generosity and sacrifice that people are making to really contribute to this pandemic. It's really inspiring.
That is inspiring. That's great to hear. Christine, what about AmeriCares? Do you find that your funding is somewhat, might be the wrong way to put this, but disaster driven? Is that one, you know, obviously we've learned that you have phenomenal long-term programs occurring around the world. What have you seen in terms of funding this year?
We saw a slow start because, again, this is not your typical disaster, earthquake, hurricane. We all didn't know what it was. And I want to go back to Optimist, your initial support. Optimist has a matching program for their clients and employees. So that initial support has been tripled because of that. So again, that gave us a great boost. Also raising awareness for the work that AmeriCares is doing among a broader constituency. So I'd say that, I don't know if you know this, but you know, Americans give over $400 billion a year in donations, and more of that is actually going to international causes. You know, we've seen like people like Tom and his wife who have been supportive of AmeriCares and are really accelerating their support and digging deep as best they can. you know, we do have a concern for, we have our upcoming big event in October, which will definitely be a virtual one, but planning to do something around that from a fundraising perspective. Because we are squarely responding to COVID-19, we have seen good support. Our concern is more of the next fiscal year and the year after that, when this, I don't want to say flattens, but when it's a little more of life going on. But again, I'm really heartened that I think more folks know about the importance of supporting, at least for our purposes, ongoing health work. And I'm actually really happy to hear Phyllis say there is indirect support going to other causes, which maybe are not squarely in the COVID-19, because that would be a concern for me just for the nonprofit community we work in, that I want to make sure that those working in you know, education areas are getting ongoing support.
Phyllis, I kind of got one more question for you. How should philanthropically inclined people think about this? And, you know, do you have any recommendations in terms of how they can structure their responses? Of course, they can donate to Optimus and AmeriCares. What are some kind of best practices when something like this occurs?
Emergency relief is really challenging. And it's challenging because so much money floods in, which is great, but oftentimes floods into organizations that may not have the capacity to absorb it. And the only one time I've seen any organization turn around and say, hey, we can't take any more money, is during the tsunami, following the tsunami, and that was Medicine Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders said, we're not taking any more money for this crisis. So understanding who you're giving money to, and it's very hard to track that money as well. When you give a donation to many emergency relief organizations, you are unlikely to hear back from them telling you exactly how they spent your money, because it's hard to track the money. This is a crisis, has to be spent quickly. Nobody's doing monitoring and evaluation of this funding. So I would advise people to give to organizations that have been doing this and have the experience and the capacity to absorb large sums of money, and also organizations that are committed to being there for the long term and are working on the ground. So I might not give to a huge organization based in the UK if I'm focused on work that is being done primarily in Southeast Asia. My advice would be not only give to AmeriCares or through UBS Optimus Foundation, but really be thoughtful about what your donation is going to do in the long term.
That's great advice. So the last thing I think I'll ask is, let's all close our eyes and imagine it's 2 or 3 years down the road. We've defeated the COVID monster. Do you see points in time where you'll continue to work together?
Should I start with that one?
Sure.
Yeah, sure.
Start, and then my answer is hell yes, but you go first.
What she said.
That's fantastic. It's a great story, and it's just incredible how timely it was, and the fact that this all kind of came together, and Tom putting your organizations together right at the point where you can do such great work together. That's really fantastic. As a human being resident on the planet, I want to say thank you to both of you for doing fantastic Amen. Work, for taking care of all of us and making things better, especially in the ancillary parts, those second derivative and third derivative issues out there that you're working to fix. So Phyllis and Christine and Tom, I want to thank you for your time today. I really appreciate the conversation.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you. What an honor.
Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Phyllis.